It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great Amber May show. Is here with topics you like out in the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
Well, I am so glad you guys joined me today on the Amber May Show. I have a special treat for you. I have a good friend, Wendy Capricci. She's here joining me today. She came in front of the church and she talked about her life story. And I know it's going to resonate with some of you out there. So I brought her on today to talk about her life story. But in the meantime, you can always check me out on the web by visiting my website at theambermayshow.com. That's theambermayshow.com. Well, welcome, Wendy, to the program.
Thank you, Amber, for having me.
And I guess I'd just like you to start from the beginning about the story that you shared with us all. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, let me see. I first came to the Lord when I was 9 years old in a small Baptist church in northern New Mexico. And for a nine-year-old, it seemed pretty much a no-brainer. You could accept Jesus and go to heaven, or you could not and go to hell. And I was pretty much in for going to heaven. unfortunately, for me, my self-will kicked in probably when I was about 15 or 16. And I started making very different choices in my life. And I started to experiment with drinking and a little bit with marijuana, but not much. I didn't particularly like that. But drinking really became a lot of things to me. It became a way to interact socially. It became a way to not be who I was. It became a way to be somebody I wanted to be. And it really mostly became a way to hide all the stuff that I'd been feeling. The home that I grew up in was a little bit crazy. Life was different in the 70s, I think, for a lot of America. It certainly wasn't unique to just my family. Everybody I knew drank, all of the parents drank, and our house was really kind of party central. So there was a lot of traffic in and out of our house, lots of people. And to back up just a little bit, my sister and I used to go to church on the church bus, and it became a game almost to see if we could get ready and out of the house before the church guy came to the door to get us.
Let me pause you right there, because that's fascinating that you said that. Now, your folks didn't go to church with you guys?
That's correct. My grandparents were believers, and that's in northern New Mexico is where my grandparents lived, and they were the ones that had led us to the Lord. But my mom, unfortunately, was she was hurting a lot in her life, and she had been divorced twice from my dad and once from another person. So she was had been married and divorced three times, and she was struggling just with a lot of stuff in her life. So she pretty much was running as fast and as far as she could.
Sure, that makes sense. I can understand where she might come from with that. But I just find it interesting that you and your sister still felt compelled and still wanted to go to church despite what you were seeing at home or doing or all of the above.
Yeah, and it was, I think our grandparents, the love that our grandparents had for us was so far-reaching and so genuine that I do think it was really the love of God that reached through them to touch our hearts.
I'm glad you said that, because doesn't our pastor always talk about that? And that was kind of where I was going with the last show. If you missed it, you can go to the website and go to the podcast page, and you can find all my previous shows there, theambermayshow.com. But it really boils down to love. And me and my boss, because I'm back at the radio station temporarily, filling in for somebody, and we were just talking about this yesterday, that the love that you have and you portray that to someone is just like you said, I'm going to use your words, more far-reaching versus someone who is going to be that holier-than-thou attitude talking down to someone saying, oh, you shouldn't do this and you're going to go to hell and this is going to happen to you. And I mean, who are we to look down upon someone? Sure, my sins might not be, our pastor says it, the same as yours. We just sin differently.
Right. Exactly. My struggle is not something you may ever struggle with, and vice versa. But just because it's different doesn't make somebody better than the other person.
Right.
You know, so, and that's just always what we felt. So probably, you know, from age 9 until, you know, I was 15 or probably 16, I kind of quit going to church, but we would ride the church bus, and we wanted to get out of the house so he wouldn't see all the people passed out in our house. Mm-hmm. And then once then to the horror, we walked out of the front door and there were people passed out in the yard.
Oh no. So, and I could just imagine, because being a teenager, you get embarrassed so easily.
You do. And we took that as somehow that was our shame. And I do think that was the enemy working on our own insecurities. And he used that to kind of start driving that wedge of, you know, you don't fit in with this church. You have this crazy household with all these drunk people and they're bad and you're, you know, the church people aren't. And that wasn't the case, I'm sure. That was just how it got translated in my mind and heart. You have this secret, you have this shame, and none of that ended up being true. But at, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14, you can't really discern that. I couldn't discern that. And I took that as something to be kept secret and locked away. And pretty soon I started to feel like I didn't fit in at the church because I had this crazy, there was not a mom and a dad and a happy mm-hmm. life. And, you know, what it looks like on the outside, mm-hmm. there was this craziness. And, you know, looking back now, I realized not everything that looks all very nice and neat is. You know, there are lots of very unhappy families that just look good from the outside.
It's true.
And I think there's a lot of people that way. If it, mm-hmm. we get in this mindset, if it looks good, it is good. Mm-hmm. And that's not always true. That's why I think, you know, alcohol commercials, they all look good. All the people are happy and young and beautiful and attractive. And you'll be good. And that, I fell into that. Well, I wanted to be like them. Mm-hmm. So I drank that thing, you know, mm-hmm. that thing they were advertising. I wanted to be that girl that could, you know, do it all, be it all.
Sure.
And it was just a lie. And I believed the enemy's lies that I was not worthy. And pretty soon then it all just kept being the secrets that we locked away, that I locked away, that I just wanted to numb myself from. So throughout this process, my mom dated several people, and there were a few bad apples in the crowd who unfortunately were predators towards my sister and myself. And that became a legacy all in itself of painful experiences and just left a lot of scars that, by the grace of God, he led us both to great people to help us heal from that and move past it, because the enemy again will use that to be name calling and something that I did that was wrong, or that I somehow was responsible for this. And that just isn't the truth.
No, that's not the truth. I'm glad you said that, because I've known people who have been victims. And it's very unfortunate. And the enemy will twist that. And then he'll also use it as, well, clearly there's no God if he let that happen to you.
Exactly right. And I think that the good news for me is I never felt like, wow, if God loved me, how could he let this happen? I kind of understood that always, that people make their own choices and that there are consequences to all those choices, good and bad, and that's kind of the path that human beings are on. We can make choices, and then we have consequences, and that come from that. And other people make choices that then sometimes impact others that they either meant to or didn't mean to.
Right.
And through the process of kind of meeting with a counselor for a while, she was helpful in teaching me that people's behavior is always about them. It's not about us. And that really helped me a lot to kind of, this was not personal towards me. My drinking was about me. It wasn't about anybody else in the universe. It was about me and how I chose to react to things that life handed me. Unfortunately, I chose poorly So from, like I said earlier, about 16 on, I started to drink. And like I said, in those days, life was a little bit different. And I would go buy liquor for my mom and her then husband, because by this time she had married her fourth husband. And that was just kind of normal. And, you know, I just find it kind of odd. I would never send my daughters, either one of them, to buy liquor for me. And we even smoked pot, all of us together, which now I find kind of just a lot of things. I'm just very glad that as a society, maybe people have become aware that that's not such a great thing. And I think my mom was just so lost and so injured by consequences in her life, people's behavior mm-hmm. in her life and her own. She just could not see her way through at that time.
And I think that's where we need to step in as people who profess that we love God, because people who don't know God get lost, and then they get deeper and deeper into things that hurt more and more. And you get to a point where you just don't know the way out of that situation.
Exactly. And you get it's like a rut. You can't get out. And if somebody doesn't help you or show you the way, it's very difficult. And often then the pain of what some of the consequences have brought is so great, then it becomes like a cycle. You don't Absolutely. Want to feel that pain.
Then the enemy also comes in. Oh, clearly God couldn't love you because of all this stuff.
Right.
I love that line. I mean, he's used it from the beginning of time, and mankind is bought at hook, line, and sinker, and that's just not the case.
It isn't. And I think through this time, I then after high school got married, moved out. I was 19, got married, moved out, and, you know, really spent the next 9 years just getting sicker and sicker in my addiction. And I was not a good wife. And, you know, probably my first husband would say he probably was not a good husband. But finally, I knew that I just didn't want to do the things I'd always been doing. I had heard an expression at a corporate retreat, actually, that said, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten. And it was kind of one of those aha moments. I had quit going to church from age 16 and just, you know, kept running. Again, repeating the cycle that I had seen. Mm-hmm. And that corporate retreat and that saying just kind of kept rolling around in my head and in my spirit. And I was, I believe, about 27 years old, and I was on a business trip in New York, and I drank a lot at dinner, had lots of cocktails before and after, and I paid for the bill. And I was there with senior executives from my company, and I just assumed that I was supposed to pay for it. Don't know why. But this was now in the 80s, but the bill was about $600.
Wow.
Right? And so I woke up, though, the next morning and realized that probably wasn't the right thing to do, and looked in the mirror at my own reflection. And I hope I never forget it, but it scared me to death, because in my reflection, I saw lifelessness. And it wasn't that I was sick and hungover. I mean, I was absolutely all of that, but there was just no light in my eyes looking back. And it scared me absolutely to death. And that was the point that when I got back to Phoenix and nearly lost my job over this, and probably rightly so, I had to pay it back, which was fine. I did. But I went to my first AA meeting.
This is all the time we have for today. Please join me again next week as we continue with Wendy telling us more about her alcoholism, her struggles with it, and how she was overcoming that.